The title tonight is Beyond the Finish, Mastering the Mental Side of Running.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you, Vince, for the awesome intro there. And this is great to be able to speak to you guys. I feel like I know half the people in this room, which is exciting, and the other half that I don't know. Thank you for being here, and thank you for everybody for being here and supporting the great race and volunteering. And I think it's super awesome what you guys are doing because, you know, having taken part in hundreds of races and been a part of the running community for 30-ish years now, it's pretty awesome what the volunteers put into it, and it's great to actually have you guys, you know, supported and valued. And he mentioned Luxembourg. So my wife's running the marathon on Saturday, and she's only literally done one run ever on the trails, and that was 2 weeks ago. She ran for 4 hours on the trails through the hardest part of the marathon course. So she's got a lot of put-upness in her, so she's going to be tough. But her brother is flew in from Luxembourg to run it with her. So that's the Luxembourgish reference there. So he's an Ironman guy, and this is actually technically his first marathon, so it's kind of cool. So they're in for a whirlwind, with the trails and everything. It's going to be a lot different than what he's used to in Europe. But yeah, beyond the finish line. So, if you look at my background, I'm a sports chiropractor, longtime runner. I often joke I've seen the dark side of running. I basically, on a day-to-day basis, about 80% of my patients are runners, and they're injured or they're doing maintenance work to stay injury-free, and or we kind of brought them back from the grave at some point with running. That's the vast majority of my existence in the sport. But the thing that excites me the most is actually really valuing my time with my patients to help with their mind, to help work on their mind. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, over time has sort of allowed for, you know, a good rapport in the community, is that it really is just, because in the end, you know, muscles are just pieces of rubber, you know, the mind is everything, right? That's what Pavan Nurmi said. And in the end, when people come in and do ultras and crazy stuff like 100 milers, you really realize how impactful the mind actually is. And as a provider, having traveled with USA Track all over the world, I mean, a lot of providers do not say the right things to people. And even at the tippy top level, it's quite alarming what some providers will say to people. And I've just always been a glass half full guy. I've always just been overly supportive. I've come back myself from the grave, and I'll reference some of this in the conversation today, numerous times with running. Thought my career was done, career-ending injuries numerous times, and fought through those. And so it's a pretty rare scenario that I get somebody on my table that I'm like, yeah, you're going to be done. Like, you should stop. Like, it's pretty rare that I'll actually say that. And I know, because I literally, in my treatment room, I keep a binder full of all of my injuries, a binder full of everything that I went through, all the blown discs, all the torn tendons, all the ruptured ACL, like everything. I have it all there, proving that I've gone through a lot of these injuries too, and I can relate to a lot of what people go through. But I kind of wanted to start the talk today a little bit about, you know, my trajectory in the sport with regards to mindset. So I had a pretty okay-ish high school career relative to what I ended up doing long term. I was, you know, 10th at state in cross, and which was good enough to kind of get me some money to go to Malone, which was a pretty solid running program at the time. They're getting better now, but we were pretty solid at the time. Perennial state champions will go there and that kind of stuff. And so I went to Malone and just immediately just got, like, so I was running like 20-ish miles a week in high school, just doing very, like, didn't really even know, like, what training seriously was, just kind of running off talent. And I got to Malone, and instantly, they just put you into 70 miles a week, just instantly. Like, freshman 70, sophomore 80, juniors 90, seniors 100, just no questions asked, top 7 at the end of the season, go to nationals, period. Like, that was the existence, like, right away. So, of course, you can imagine I got injured a ton. So, 2/3 of my college career, I had injuries. I actually went back and calculated that. It's roughly 2/3 of my whole college career I was injured. I really didn't get any sort of foothold on training. Now, they since adapted their training, so don't think that that's what Malone does now. They've wised up a little bit. The training from the 90s and the early 2000s is not what they do now. But yeah, so like I look back on that, and it's like, you know, one of those things where I had to conquer a lot of demons along the way, because, you know, you realize you have this talent, and you realize you have this potential, and you just keep getting just the door slammed in your face. And that happened a lot. So coming in all the way from my freshman year all the way through to about halfway through my junior year, I pretty much really never completed a season. When I got to my junior year, I sort of like, I was coming off a knee surgery and a wrist surgery, and so fitness just kind of came easy then, and I think I wasn't trying. And when I was running professionally, this is one of the things that my coach at the time sort of told me that I realized at the time that he would often say, don't squeeze, right? Don't want it too much. And kind of the way that connected with me is like, have any of you like ever had like a really nice shirt and you get the shirt, maybe even as like a kid in high school or something like that, and you're like, oh dude, I don't want to get this shirt dirty. This shirt's awesome, right? And you're gonna get that shirt dirty, right? Because you put it out there. You're trying too hard to not get that shirt dirty, right? And I often think about that with racing. If you want it too much, you'd be like squeezing, you're like writing splits on your arm, and you're like, you got this weird mantra about it, it's probably not gonna go well. You're putting too much anxiety and angst into it. And so as I kind of walk through my career, I'm gonna sort of dabble in sort of actionable items to kind of help with the mindset and help with racing and how to conquer some of these demons. But anyways, when my junior year, when I realized like the don't squeeze mentality, didn't even realize how fit I was at the time. I was really only training for like 6 weeks coming off an injury. And I was studying for this really hard math exam. So I was like under the bleachers, like literally just immersed in studying for this indoor race. And then one of my teammates was like, dude, the race is like literally going to race in like 10 minutes. Like we're putting on our spikes. You got to go. And I didn't even warm up. And I was like, oh crap. All right. Got to go. And so I put on my spikes and didn't warm up and just towed the line. And I'm like, why don't I just hang with the leaders in this race? Like, what the hell am I doing here? Like, why don't I just hang with the leaders? And then I won the race. And it shocked me that at how easy I was able to just like snap into this like next level mindset. And it was because I was like totally distracting myself. I was not consumed with the race. I was like, it just was reflexive to me. I'd raced enough through high school and early college that I knew how to like react in races. And then I thought to myself, like right when I was in the race, I literally had this thought, and this is an important item, that I'm gonna give 100% today. So what else do I have to worry about? Like literally there's nothing else to worry about. And if you can actually at the end of the day, when you're you know, looking yourself in the mirror and you're trying to figure out what you want to do at a next race and how you're going to challenge your next big goal, you if you're going to give 100%, that's literally the only thing you need to worry about. And if, you know, however you have to set up your mindset to get there, but that takes away the variable of weather, it takes away the variable of pacing, it takes away the variable of all that, because all of those concepts sort of need to be wrestled with in training. But when you're racing, you just commit to the 100%. And I think that was just such a freeing mentality. So then from that point on, I would like distract myself with like reading books, or I would like, I always had this mindset that I would like, if I'm laughing on the line, like I know I'm gonna race well. Cause like I would just like drop right into this like race mentality, but I wasn't taking it too serious. It kind of came free and easy. And I think of racing as a lot like dancing. Like if you ever go to dancing and you're like nervous, then you can tell like people you're nervous, you know. Like, but if somebody's like loose and they know how to dance and they're having a good time, and you know, that's how racing is. It should just be loose and just kind of come natural. And it's more of an art than a science, the actual racing portion. You know, training is the science side of it, but racing really is the art side of it. And I think having that sort of mindset matters as well. So then I graduate from Malone. At the time, you know, it was just basically like, all right, you know, I'm good enough to run, but not good enough to get like a big contract. And I didn't want to go run for like a group like Hanson's or Zap Fitness. So I wanted to kind of basically do it on my own. So at the time, you basically had to qualify for the Olympic trials to just get any sort of notoriety. And I wasn't fast enough to do anything on the track. So I dabbled with the marathon. So I run Chicago Marathon in 2006, which that year was 38-ish at the start and driving rain. So it was just a terrible year weather-wise. But that race was the epitome of squeezing, because I definitely wanted it too much at that point. Like I had hung so much of my career on qualifying for the trials. I was holding off I thought at the time I was going to go to med school. So I was kind of holding off on that to like qualify for the trials. And in that race, my training partner basically said, he was like, yeah, dude, like we're just going to run. Cause at the time the B standard was 222. And he's like, we're just going to run 221 pace, like period. We're just going to do it. And I'm not going to speed up. And he was more of a veteran marathoner than I was. And at mile 17, he, you know, started speeding up. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess this is what we got to do, right? We got to start closing it down. And I just dipped into the 5.0s. And at that point, it was too much. So I actually hit the wall pretty bad in that race. So bad that I actually, about with about 5K left, I literally forgot how far a marathon was. Like, I couldn't remember that it was 26 miles. Like, I was that delirious. I didn't, like, sober up till the lead female passed me. And then I was like, oh, man. And then somebody yelled, like, you got 5K left. I'm like, oh, crap, it's 26 miles. But then I actually, that race was crazy because I actually missed the standard by 29 seconds. So it was just devastating. So it took me another 5 years to run another marathon. Well, in that time period, I was like, well, I got to move on with life. So I ended up choosing to go to chiropractic school over med school. Long story with that. But basically, through that period, I took 2 years down. I wasn't racing. I had a plantar fascia issue that I thought I was just kind of done with it. And then one time I was on a run late 2009, and I just had this weird vision in my head of like, wouldn't it be sweet if like everybody from my family like saw me on TV at the Olympic trials? Like what if you actually tried that again and went after it? Well, from 2008 Olympic trials to 2012, they dropped the standard to 219. So you had to go under 219 to get in, and the B standard was 222. So they dropped it by 3 minutes. I'm like, I don't even care what the standard is. Like, I'm going to complete this task. And I hadn't really run for 2 years. And luckily, like, fitness came quick. Fitness came easy. I was living in Atlanta at the time, and I was, you know, slaying some races pretty good. I was winning decent money on the roads. And so I was like, all right, so now's the time to really get after it. So I ran Grandma's in 2011. Now, the week of Grandma's, I strained my Achilles really bad. So I really couldn't run that week. And so I thought we were going to back out of Grandma's and maybe try for CIM later in the year. Well, I told my coach, I'm like, let me just go up there because, you know, the race director, he's flying us up there. So I'm just going to go and just see what it's like in case I race Grandma's in the future. I can visualize kind of what's going on. So I take the flight, get there, and I'm like, my Achilles actually kind of feels pretty good. So then I'm like, all right, whatever, I'm just going to try it. So then I try it. So then race goes off and I feel pretty good. My Achilles feels pretty good. And I'm like, all right. So I wasn't kind of really mentally prepared to handle that marathon that day because I thought I was just going to wait till CIM. But I got about 8 miles in and I'm like, I don't want to hurt anymore. Like, I don't know if I want to do what happened in Chicago, because Chicago was my last. I'd only run one other marathon up to that point. So my delirium was my only reference to the marathon. I'm like, I don't want to do this. I don't know if I want to hurt right now. I wasn't mentally prepared. But then in training, I had visualized so much of this, and I had worked, I had basically, at almost every single run in the month heading into the race, I had run a 5:12 at some point in that run just to feel the rhythm of a 5:12, which was the pace I was trying to run. And I just was like trying to click it off and just get into that rhythm. So when I was in the race, I said, okay, mile 8, if I can run every single mile from here to mile 20 at 5:12 or no slower than 5:20, then I'll finish the race. Like, I kind of had this barter in my head, right? And then all of a sudden, like, I'm clicking off 5:12, clicking off 5:12, clicking off 5:12. And then at about mile 15, I just start like laughing out loud because I'm like, I can't even sabotage myself. I had worked into my subconscious so deeply to run 5:12s that I literally, it was just coming so natural. It was almost like I was like, it was an out of body experience. And sure enough, I did qualify for the trials that day. And it was just such a cool experience because, I mean, that was like next level stuff mentally wise. Because I wasn't mentally prepared going into it, but it was all about the visualization. It was all about the emotion of it, like the understanding, like what I was really driven to do. I mean, like, it's the reason why, like, you know, moms can pick cars off babies and stuff. And yeah, it's like emotions will make you do some crazy things. And that's another really important thing about running and understanding really reaching your performance level and really achieving the highest thing that you want to achieve is tying in emotion to that. I mean, that's really when it matters. And what better way to do that than visualization? And that race really, really taught me that. So much to the point where even after that race, I would have bouts of injuries and bouts of setbacks. And I wouldn't really train all that hard, but I still would run really, really decent times by just mentally working on the race, mentally rehearsing things. When am I going to make moves? What does it feel like? What does 440 feel like? What does 450 feel like? You know, like kind of like rehearsing these things in my mind. And you can do some phenomenal things. I think at the time when I was had just graduated from chiropractic school, one of the guys I was working with at the time he owned the world record for the fastest club head speed. He was one of those long drivers with golf. And he was telling me some story about how like the golfing pros that he kind of works with, they basically will, they've had studies within the golf arena that if you work, you're almost better off working on putting and driving and everything with your mind than even practicing the swing. And they've actually had studies where if you have golfers just mentally rehearse the swing and not even pick up the club, that you get better, if not just as good of results as actually practicing. And I think this is so underutilized in racing. And it's the reason why Emil Zátopek in the 1956 Olympics, right after he won the 5,000, 10,000 marathon, right afterward, he said, runners have to run with dreams in their heart. And he said, after he won the marathon, it was the first ever marathon that he had run, and he won it after running the 5 and the 10 and all the prelims. He basically was just like, I did it because I dreamed more than everybody else. I just wanted to dream to win this race, and he was able to complete that task. So, you know, it's just that just tying into emotion, visualization, just rehearsing that. And I got really creative on my runs through this era. I would really like rehearse, like I would imagine like what people would say on the sidelines or like commentators if they're commenting the race, like, oh my God, you know, so-and-so just dropped a whatever mile. And, you know, like kind of just rehearsing these things in my head. And it's just so impactful to just visualize in that way and just kind of, you know, bring the mind into fruition from there. I would say these are some of the key points that kind of got me through that through that tough era of just rising up from injuries and just eventually battling through these injuries and fitness and to reach the goals of getting to the trials. Actually, at the trials was an interesting experience because I was super fit going in. I had a weird buildup, and I had to drop out of Columbus that year, the half marathon. But I knew I was super fit. But I, the week of the race, had something crazy happen. I got food poisoning. I remember I went to P.F. Chang's over there in Montrose to start carb loading right before I flew down to Houston for the Olympic trials and got food poisoning, and definitely was not able to carb load for that race. But like literally 0% affected me mentally, like quite literally 0%. Because I knew what I had just conquered at Grandma's. I knew what craziness can happen. I mean, I didn't even really run the week of Grandma's. And so it's like 0% affected me. And when the race went off, I mean, there was some strategy involved in terms of how the race started with the TV sponsors and everything. But the race went off really fast for the males and really slow for the females, if you guys remember that trials. And I was way back in like 110th place at one point. But I ended up 45th in that race. But my goal was to be the top Ohioan. And I knew the guys that were the top Ohioans at the time, the Ordway brothers, I knew they were going to go out hard. I just knew it. That's just the way they were. And so I just knew to be patient and patient and patient. And sure enough, I passed them a mile 25, which was pretty awesome. So, you know, and that just, again, ties into, you know, expectations. And, you know, a lot of us, you know, I always say, like with treating people, you're most at risk for injuries at the beginning of a training cycle and at the end of a training cycle. And we all know that when you're peaking, we've all had the experience of you're going to get sick, you're going to get something pop up. And there is a physiological reason for that. There's a definitive physiological reason for that. And so anytime you head into a race and you get something pop up, like a sore knee or a sore Achilles, like, actually don't be mad. Like, it's actually kind of good that that's happening, because what's happening is your body is actually trying to repair the final little bit of things before it heads into that race. So that's actually a welcoming thing. And a lot of times when patients start panicking, I'm like, no, this is great. Like, because if you can't repair your knee right now, you're probably not repairing your liver enzymes either. So you're not able to reach out, you know, deep into that well like you might think you can. So if you're not able to repair your musculoskeletal system, then other areas of your body are also suffering. So a lot of times, like, don't panic when you head into races and you get sick and you get some final setback, like a sore knee or something like that. Like I said, you know, this is something that shouldn't knock you off your rocker, and you should definitely be like really still committed to the goal. You know, there was a really interesting study done when I kind of think of this, that if you told somebody to run all out for 20 minutes, they will strategize and complete the task accordingly. But then if you tell somebody that they're going to run all out for 10 minutes, but right before you have them start, you say, oh, wait, by the way, we're going to change that to 20 minutes, they actually get pissed. And then all of a sudden, now they don't race as hard. And they've done this with the same athletes, and they reproduce this over and over and over. And it has to do with expectations. And so understanding heading into racing, what the expectations are, what, you know, not trying to sell yourself short, but still being, still committing to the task at hand. And I think that's a really interesting study that kind of shows like how we can mentally sabotage ourselves if we come in with preconceived notions and what we might think, you know, the race should look like or should be like. Like if you mentally prepared for like a sunny, hot day and it's stormy and rainy, like whatever, like you just got to roll with it. Like it's just the way it is. And so mentally just don't like hang on to those things. Like I said before, just kind of hunker down to the 100%. But lastly, kind of one of the last things I wanted to touch upon, and then we'd get you on with your dessert here, is, you know, I remember I was watching, I think it was the NBA Cup earlier this season, and Trae Young made a ridiculous shot to knock out the Knicks in the NBA Cup this year. And then right after he made the shot, and it was like a buzzer beater, he did some funky dance. And then the commentator right after the game was like, oh my God, like that dance, like did you know you were going to do it? And he's like, absolutely, I knew I was going to do the dance because I knew I was going to make the shot. And it's like, he was just like so perturbed that this guy like asked him a question about like questioning his final shot. He's like, no, I knew I was going to make it. So I was preparing the dance accordingly. And the point being there, it's like Steph Curry isn't confident after he shoots the shot. Like he's not confident after he makes the shot. He's confident before he shoots the shot. Like that's a really important concept. And it's important to understand that confidence needs to exist on the line. It should not exist based on your past experiences. It should not exist based on, you know, you run the race and all of a sudden you're confident after it. No. You need to be confident towing the line. And that's really, really important concept. And that kind of goes back to my trial story of like, I was confident. I wasn't going to sell myself short. Like, sure, maybe I could have run 2:16 that day, whatever, but I don't care about hypotheticals. Like, that was the life I lived. So it's like, just commit, just get after it. And the other big thing, and this is especially promising or especially important in the ultra world, is like, you know, in races themselves, like don't let your highs get too high and your lows get too low. Like just ride the wave. Like if you start a race and you feel like crap, whatever, who cares? Like it could turn around literally in 20 minutes, it can turn around an hour, you just never know. You just gotta just ride that wave. If you start a race and you feel great, well, be careful because there's probably something right around the corner that's gonna snake bite you. So just don't even think about, like, it's kind of like what Tom Brady says about getting into the zone. It's like, don't draw judgment. You know, there's a famous sports psychology book called The Inner Game of Tennis, which is probably heralded by most top-end track and field people that I treat that as the best sports psychology book. And it really is just the simple process of don't draw judgment. When you're in a race, don't draw judgment about your mile split. Don't draw judgment about how you feel. Don't, like, you react to what's happening. Like, obviously, if you need to drink water, you need to drink water. You need to be hydrated, you need to eat, you need to listen to these things, but don't react to like how the race started or what you think the race is gonna be like in the end. Just exist in that moment. The power of now, like Eckhart Tolle says, just existing in that moment, and that's what really allows you to get to that well, is like not fearing what's coming and not thinking and dwelling on what happened in the past, but it's just like riding that wave of the now. And I think that's a huge concept. And I'll end with this. There's also been studies shown that if people go into workouts grateful and having written in a journal what they're grateful for, that they actually can push harder than people who wrote in things that bothered them earlier that day. So in other words, you can test this if you're a coach with some of your athletes. If you write in a journal what frustrates you, and then you go do a workout and then give perceived exertions, heart rates, etc., the heart rates and everything will actually reflect poorly relative to if you have somebody write in a journal positive things, grateful things that are grateful for, then they can actually push harder and actually excel. And that's a phenomenal thing. So if you're ever in the well in a race and you're ever really struggling, like literally just start ruminating on things that, you know, you're grateful for, things that you love, things that you feel happy and things that just make you excited. And you just dwell on these things, and that will really be the best thing to pull you out of the rut. Kipchoge knows this well. He actually has been cited numerous times saying that he smiles specifically in races because he knows that it increases 2% of efficiency in racing. And that was one of his secrets of breaking two, is that he smiled for about 50% of that race, which is crazy when he broke two. if you did plyometrics for 6 weeks twice a week, that doesn't get you 2% gains in running economy. But smiling in racing actually does, which is crazy thought. So, you know, we can sometimes force, and actors will tell you this, because my wife goes through a bunch of acting classes, you can force happiness into your system by literally just smiling. So thinking on grateful things, smiling, all of a sudden, boom, you can commit. You can commit so much more than you think you can. And that's a really important concept. And I feel like that's kind of the last concept I want to end on, because I feel like that's the most important one. Does anybody have any comments, questions, or anything? Awesome. Well, thank you guys for listening to me ramble a little bit about the mindset of things, and I hope the dessert is awesome. Yeah.
I just wanted to speak to the fact that these little tricks that we can do are all free.
Yeah, 100%.
Available.
Yeah.
How you speak to tapping into that joy.
Yeah. Yeah, and anybody that, you know, it's what's interesting too, when you look at, if you look at people that pop, as we say in the track, pro track world, they're often the Tom Brady's of the world, right? The seventh round draft picks, the people that were glossed over for a major university, you know. Right now the fastest guy in the state of Ohio, from the state of Ohio, is Anthony Camerari. He's a 1305 5K guy. He was 26th at best in cross country in high school. Never won state, never won nationals. Now he's like seventh in the U.S. It's crazy. And that dude is tough. That dude is mentally tough. And he has worked on his mind for year after year after year. And that's basically, and the other crazy thing about Anthony is that he trains a ton in cross training. And so he really doesn't even run that high of mileage. If you follow him on Strava, you're like, oh, he runs like 60, 70 mile weeks. And the dude runs 1305. It's crazy. But he's an absolute monster with cross training. And he will tell you straight up, like he's been on our podcast numerous times, he'll tell you straight up, he just drives into his mind what he wants to happen when he's suffering on the bike, when he's suffering on the elliptical. He just drives it into his mind. And the mind is super goal-oriented. And if you drive it in there, it'll go, okay, that's what we're doing. So it just goes, fine, that's what I'm doing. And so that's an important concept, is just driving in there whenever you're doing some of this stuff. Awesome. Thank you, guys.
I thank Leo, and dessert is on the table.
Dr. Leo here. Be sure to check out my new book, Faster Without Fail, Your Guide to Overcoming Injuries and Running Faster Than Ever. It is now available on Amazon. You could read reviews on the Amazon. You can check out what other people have said about it. But basically, if you want to revolutionize your running form and better understand how to stay injury-free within the sport, this is your guide. Feel free to reach out and let us know what you think of the book. I would love to hear your feedback. But again, please check it out on Amazon. Faster Without Fail. Appreciate it. Dr. Leo here. If you want to catch me in another setting, be sure to check out my YouTube page, Running Rehab, where you will find exercises on how to stay healthy with running, how to improve your running form, and a bunch of other tips and tricks on how to get over common injuries. So again, Running Rehab.